here we are on World AIDS Day again. This year, the theme is human rights. What are the implications for rural Alaska? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. When you live in a village, it's not always easy to get answers about AIDS and HIV. The phone lines, however, are open now at 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call, 550-8422. Email talk at aprn.org. Trevor Storrs of the Alaska AIDS Assistance Association joins us on another World AIDS Day edition of Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Cook Inlet Keeper. The Muckrakers Ball is Saturday, December 5th at 7 p.m. at Anchorage Rum Runners. Jeannie Devin will be recognized for her blog, The Mudflats. Information online at inletkeeper.org.
The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
Well, ever since we've been doing Talk of Alaska, come the 1st of December, we have tended to gravitate around to an observation of World AIDS Day. And some years we've missed. I think last year we missed. But this year, the show actually falls on that day, the 1st of December. And I'm happy to welcome Trevor Storrs back to the microphones here. How are you doing, Trevor?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you.
So how long have you been doing this now at the, what is it, the quadruple A?
The quadruple A, A to the power of four. Well, I've been with the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association in the current role as executive director for 7 years, just celebrated that a few weeks ago. Time flies when you're having fun and staying busy. But I've been actually with the organization since 98, 99, I actually joined their board, and then I became executive director after that. So it's been some time, 10, 11 years.
Well, and so much has changed.
A lot has changed. I've been in the HIV field since the early 90s and getting involved. And the face of AIDS has greatly changed, and how we're approaching it has changed. And the medical side has changed. It's been pretty amazing what has gone on in the almost 30 years that the disease has been around.
So the choice, I guess, I don't know, it's a World AIDS Day, but generally it seems to be sort of headquartered out of Great Britain, United Kingdom. And they're putting an emphasis on human rights this time around. And they make me aware, I think, that of just how vast this epidemic has become, the number of people that have it, the number of people that are HIV positive, and how many of these people are not in a situation where they're likely to get the drugs that they need and so forth.
Well, it's not even just the drugs. It's even just being allowed to live in some locations. It's sometimes even being allowed to stay in your village. The things that happen to individuals. And a lot of people look at World AIDS Day. It's been around since 1988, and they take a very much global look. It's not just a local or just a U.S. Look. But even here, we've experienced people that are Alaska Native, and once their village finds out that they're positive, they have been banned from the village. Talk about a human right here.
This has really happened?
This has really happened. And for the longest time, although under President Obama it's changed, that we were one of the last few countries that were not allowing people to come to even visit from certain countries if you're HIV positive, period. There was a ban. And we're supposed to be a progressive and accepting country. And talk about a human rights violation, in my opinion, of discriminating people based off a disease, and especially a disease that has to be passed on intimately. It's not even like the H1N1 flu. They weren't even banning people from coming into our country that were sick, that could be easily passed on, but yet they were doing it for HIV.
Well, what is a village to do? I mean, the public health system can be fragmentary. there can be problems just in the, you know, the nonprofit that is running public health in this or that village. And the elders get word that someone is positive in the village. You can understand why they might want to be kind of drastic about it.
Absolutely. And that's because of the stigma, fear. It's a powerful tool. It's been used for decades to get people to do things or has caused people to react. And the best way to fight fear is to actually become educated. All the villages now, you watch the GCI commercials, they're all connected. They have access to the internet, and the internet has such vast information that you type in HIV, you can get the real story and understand that HIV and how it's transmitted, and that you'll understand that it's not passed on through handshakes, hugs, the sharing a toilet seat, things of that nature. And that belief is still there. And if you get rid of that fear and
not,
actually have,
not even mosquito bites?
Not even a mosquito bite. That does not exist. And there's proven fact. It's been researched. So once people are empowered through knowledge, that fear can dissipate and they can start looking at it as a village. Because when you start taking people out of a community and you basically isolate them, and people think isolation, stick them all on an island and we can get rid of the disease. That doesn't work. What happens is no matter what, people still go visit those individuals and they then contract the disease, but nobody has identified them and they come back in. But it's a proven fact, and it's not just with HIV, it's any social issue that we have. When a community surrounds it and addresses it head on and provides the support to the individual, one, takes responsibility or greater responsibility of what's going on in their life, but also are contributing to the resolution of that issue. And you start seeing that issue decrease in the community and you see the social norms change. But when you start ostracizing people, that's when it starts to explode.
All right, let's say that somebody decides to get tested for whatever reason, they suspect something, maybe they don't, they just decide to get tested. And it comes back positive. As I, you know, from previous editions of this program, I know that this is, first off, there's confidentiality. Second off, there is, you want to be careful how you give person the word of how their test came out. Maybe you can explain that.
Well, let's even go right to the beginning. The number one prevention tool that we have is for folks to know their HIV status. And the higher risk behavior that you may be engaged in, the more important it is to know your status and or how often you get to know it.
That sounds very basic.
And the tests now we do, and majority of the people are starting to do it, is the quick test, the oral quick. And it's a swab of the mouth. It's not even a draw of blood. So no needles, which is really good for people like myself. And you get your results in 20 minutes. And within those 20 minutes, we have a very in-depth discussion. It's not just about knowing your status. We take that opportunity to educate people about HIV, but also examine their life and see what risk factors they have and talk about how did they reduce their risk. If the test comes out positive, the oral quick, we actually do a second test because there's always a confirmatory test. And let's say that comes out and it's confirmed that someone's HIV positive. The first thing and the most important thing that we do is we provide support. It's pretty traumatic because people still think it's a death sentence, and it's not. With the marvels of today and the technology around medications, the supports, people are expected to have a full life, which 70s, 80s, full longevity. It's a chronic disease, and we try to educate folks that. And our first step is just providing the basic info. They're already overwhelmed. Anytime you get a diagnosis of a chronic disease, it's overwhelming. So we don't bombard them with a lot of information. We provide the support, contact. And if they're done through us at the 4As, we are the lead HIV/AIDS organization, so we provide service. And we set up an appointment, if they so choose, immediately with a case manager. They usually take 24 hours, and within 24 hours, we follow back up with them and check in and have them come back in and find out where they're at. Because one of the biggest fears that they have is disclosure. They feel so alone, and they don't want to share it with friends or family. Some can, some cannot. If they don't, we become that network. And we provide that ear. We start processing with them. If we need to, we've got counselors that are able to talk with them on all levels and get them in. Because what's really important is connecting somebody to services. An individual, from the point of infection, the longer they take to being diagnosed and accessing service, life longevity decreases. But if they get infected and get closer to that point of accessing services, they have a greater chance of life longevity.
My guest is Trevor Storrs, Executive Director, Alaska AIDS Assistance Association. And I think I'd like to throw it open to any questions that listeners may have. This information can be a little hard to get if you're out in a village, and you're welcome to call Talk of Alaska at 1-800-478-8255. And give us just a first name. It's anonymous. If you're calling from Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org. And Trevor, you said something that piqued my interest. You said, well, what's the most positive thing is if there is a case in a village, that the village surrounds it. Can you explain that?
Well, surrounding it is, as I indicated, having knowledge about it, but don't ostracize the person. Because again, to transmit HIV, you have to be intimate. You have to come in contact of one of four fluids. It's blood, semen, vaginal fluid, or breast milk. All very intimate. It's not through contact. It's not airborne. And some of the, like vaginal fluid and semen, is very intimate. So what you want this individual to do is be aware of the disease, that by sharing with folks that they are not going to be ostracized and or lose their, and I don't mean by lose their house, but even just lose the connection with their family and their loved ones. We are a social being.
So right in the community, this needs to be done.
Absolutely. Accept the person. No different now, as if they had cancer.
If you're in the urban setting, let's say Anchorage, and you know, frankly, you know, it's a lot more convenient in some ways to be gay in a city than it is in a village. That's
absolutely.
It's totally,
but,
well,
Steve.
Yeah,
it's not a gay disease.
Yes, I understand.
That's really important. It's not even about being gay. It's not being about straight. There's a variety of people that are living with this disease that have all realms of sexual contact, or it's through IDU, which is intravenous drug use, and all that stuff comes with stigma already. And then you add this disease to it. By a community surrounding them and making sure that that network is there, that individual take responsibility for the disease, so they, one, disclose, and two, ensure they don't transmit it to others. Because if they do that, then the disease stops at them. But it's when we kick them out of the network, whether it be a village or even an urban setting. We've had people lose their family, and it's a large city. They are just as close-minded at times as a village can be. Big city does not mean progressiveness. They lose it. They don't care about themselves, so why are they going to care about their community? So they have no problems transmitting it to others. But it's a proven fact, when we build a community around them, they take responsibility, and the disease stops with them. And that's how we prevent the spread.
Yeah, you know, it strikes me, because it is a fatal disease. However, HIV is a chronic infection.
Mm-hmm.
A person can easily jump to the conclusion that their life, this is the end of their life. And that can lead to a different sort of risky behavior if you don't care about yourself.
And that's part of the stigma. Back in the early 80s, when you got diagnosed with AIDS, you had about 18 months to live on average. Now that's not the case. Now, I'm not saying, and this is the other side, is that people think, well, the medications are out there, so I don't have to worry, because if I get it, I can just live with meds, pop a pill.
Yeah, right.
Well, the side effects are great, and what it does to your body and just overall being of living with a chronic disease is not easy. And I don't encourage that, whether it be diabetes, heart disease, or HIV. It's still just a chronic disease, and people can have a full life. It's not a death sentence. Now, you'll need to make some changes. No different when you go in and they say you are a candidate for type 1. You have to change your diet. You need to be exercising. You may have to go on medication. You have to see doctors on a regular basis. you have to do a lot of social behavioral changes, how you engage with others. Before, you maybe were having unsafe sex for whatever reason. And now it's always going to be using a condom. Having to disclose. And sometimes disclosure is not even about living with this disease that has a stigma. It's what people might think about you. And like you said, it's really quick. Oh, you're HIV positive? You must be gay. No. You must be a drug user. No. It could have been a variety of other things that have happened to this person that has made them positive. But they automatically assume, which then leads to people feeling isolated. And who wants to disclose? If we accept people for who they are, we could really have an impact on this disease.
Trevor Storr is our guest. Alaska AIDS Assistance Association. We're open for your discussion at 1-800-478-8255 statewide. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. The email talk@aprn.org. I think it's a good time to put the hotline in. So please.
Great. A lot of people will have questions. So if you call 1-800-478-AIDS, A-I-D-S, you can call an anonymous, just like here, and get your questions answered. But you can also go to Alaskan AIDS, so it's Alaska with an N, AIDS.org, and there's a whole website of resources. One of the new things, and if you go to that website and actually click on to Power On AK, it is a national site that's tailored towards Alaska that pretty well answers any question to HIV and any other STD to help people understand. But our website tells you where you can get free HIV testing, and it looks at the state. It's not just an Anchorage. That's why we're called the Alaskan AIDS. And we can get you connected and help you figure out where you can get free condoms, HIV testing, or any other information or supplies you need to protect yourself.
Is today a little bit different day for you at the quadruple A, 8 to the 4th power?
It is a different day. It's sometimes a very hard day. At 6 o'clock, we do a candlelight vigil. And at that, we do what's called the calling of names. And in this past year, we have lost probably nearly 15 individuals.
Ooh.
The most we have in probably a decade in a total of a year. There was a point where they were losing 20 to 30 folks. And because of the marvels of today's technology and medications, we haven't had that issue. This year has been a different year. No particular reason, it just has been. And it's been really hard. And tonight, I think there's going to be some tears because very close to a lot of these individuals.
And where will that be?
It's going to be at the Wolf's Den at UAA. We've connected with one of their student groups out there. So we've got the Wolf's Den, and it'll be at 6 o'clock. So hopefully a lot of folks will come out.
And it's just fine for people to come.
Please. It's wonderful if people come. The more, the better, to show the support and the significance. A lot of people think Alaska's not affected. It's amazing when I travel and I explain what I do. People go, it's in Alaska? And I have to go, it's everywhere. We have a low count, but we have some of the right factors that could generate an explosion if things were not addressed. If we, as an organization, and what public health does and what the state does, if we weren't doing that, it would be a different story today.
Do you think we are?
A different story?
No. Do you think we are doing what we need to do?
I think we're doing a very good job. Do I wish we could do more? Absolutely. Who can't say that?
Well, yeah.
Nothing's perfect. But I have to say that we're doing amazing. HIV, the state has one of the best partner notification programs. And what they do is when somebody becomes positive, they connect with that individual. They identify the beginning point where they could have been infected and the end point. Corral those individuals in a positive way and get those people tested. Because again, once someone knows their status, 75% of individuals greatly change their behavior immediately to minimize the transmission and or prevent it at all. So it's really important. And again, that connection of knowing your status immediately. So that has generated a lot of our identifying of people are positive. On a national level, it says 1 in 4 people who are HIV positive don't even know it. So 1 in 4. Here in Alaska, it's not even close to that. I think it's easily maybe 1 in 20, 1 in 30. That's a great difference. And that's because of the efforts of our public health organizations like the 4As and our supporters. And we're able to do that because of the size of our community. And really, sometimes when you don't have tons and tons of resources, you get really smart and inventive. And that's what we've done as a community.
Your vigil this evening, you said you'll be remembering how many people that we lost this year?
We will be remembering over 1,300 people since 82 have been identified of living with HIV, mm-hmm. over 50% of those individuals. So we're talking, 1,300, 650 folks have passed on or no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be remembering all of them. We don't have all their names. Some folks we don't and not allowed to say their names. We never got that permission. But we'll be definitely calling out over 100 individuals' names.
Hmm. So it's going to take a while.
It will take a while. What we do is we pass it out. And a lot of people are also encouraged, if you know a name, just to say it and remember them. And a lot of folks do that. And we pass out the names and people just randomly call them out. It's pretty powerful.
Well, it would be. It certainly would be for me. I mean, you know, there's people I know that I've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be good to do that.
It makes it real.
Yeah.
A lot of people, again, the disease, it's easy to hate the disease, but when you put a face to it, and more importantly, a name, it becomes real. And
right.
People start understanding it.
Yeah, and it's such a... you know, the people that I've known that we've lost, and some that we haven't, it's a fight. It's been, each tale seems different, and there's a long fight.
It is. And you kind of asked a question, are we doing everything and or... what more can be done? It needs to be done in a simple way. Every day on the radio, I hear about the next thing we could be doing to improve our health. If we start eating this vegetable, we get this. If I ate everything I was supposed to, I would, even as vegetables, I think I would be probably 200 pounds overweight because I'd be trying to eat everything to stay healthy and to get all the nutrients, or doing this exercise and doing this program. It's really hard. And if you get into it, how do you do everything? Some things are just simple. And HIV is very simple in the sense of what you can do. Just know your status, which can be part of your annual physical, and or you can do it privately. It takes 20 minutes. And then just be thinking about if you're sexually active, wear a condom. It's simple. It's universal precautions. You wouldn't touch somebody else's blood. So why would you touch somebody else's fluid in general? Wear a condom, have that barrier, same as a latex glove, mm-hmm. that concept. Things that are simple, and that's what I want to leave people with. If I give you this complicated process and get into depth, people forget it. We've got too much going on when bombarded. Those two simple things will have the hugest and have had the hugest impact, not just in our community, but worldwide.
So can I go to your office and get a test, mm-hmm. set of swabs without talking to anybody? Take it off the shelf and take it home?
No. There is still a test out there. I've never looked in Fred Meyer's, but I don't think any of them sell it. But there used to be over-the-counter a test. And it works. It's like a home pregnancy test, but it has to be mailed off, and then you have to call in for your results. The only problem with that test for me is if you are positive, you don't get to talk to a live person. The supports aren't there. But if you need that much privacy and you're that scared, it's better than nothing. But we are 100% confidential, and we talk to people to the point of they're willing. When folks come in, if they're that adamant and they don't want to talk to us and they just want to test, we do that. But we're kind of like a bartender. It's pretty amazing when people sit down and the things that come out and the questions that they have. And it's changed them.
Do you still do that sort of work, or are you stuck administrating?
That's actually my favorite part of the job.
Really?
I don't get to do much. I have the lowest count. I'm always running around and trying to help the staff and get the money and things like that. But when I'm called upon, that's my favorite part, having those conversations.
What sort of caseload do you have down there?
We see approximately 250 on average individuals annually who are living with HIV. We have an office in Juneau as well, and they take care of the whole Southeast. And then we partner up. Fairbanks has the Interior AIDS Association, and they take care of the Fairbanks area. And then we're responsible for the rest of the state. But we also partner with organizations like Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. We are a white organization, and white organizations going out to the village and talking about something as intimate as HIV does not work. It doesn't work culturally. So we really work with ANTHC. They're the ones who are the face of the fight for AIDS in the village, and we collaborate. We provide support. We do whatever we can to make sure they do what they need to do, and they do it for us here in Anchorage. It's, again, that's our success. We have limited resources here. I've been to communities where everybody fights for the dollars, fight for their names, be in front. That doesn't happen here. We're truly a community of prevention workers and service providers. We reach hundreds of thousands of people through our education, whether it be targeted education for high-risk groups, where we institute a specific program that is research-based and effective, whereas we do general outreach, like today. This is general outreach, letting the community know about HIV. And we encourage, please, parents. Our school system, I wish we could revamp their sex ed program. The number one activity that is contributing to HIV transmission is through sexual contact. Second is through IDU, intravenous drug use. It's so important for parents to be talking to the kids now about sex and safe sex and expectations without putting down the rules, because the kids need to figure it out themselves, inform them so they can make informed decisions.
Trevor, I understand oral sex has gotten to be quite the big thing, but I just don't understand about how you would use a condom with that.
Well, that's a good question. It has become a big thing, especially within the younger group, because it's not seen as sex.
It's not sex, yeah.
Right.
It's like Bill Clinton, I think.
thank you, Bill. Although it's still very pleasurable. Plus, abstinence-only programs really talk about vaginal penetration, so there's other penetrations that happen, whether it be anal or oral. Most people don't like the taste of latex. And I'll be honest with folks out there that even the chocolate ones or the grape ones, when you taste them, the taste isn't there. Oral sex is low risk in compared to unprotected vaginal and anal, and they've done studies.
That's what Dr. Saltonstall told us, yeah.
It's very low risk. What I encourage people to do is, again, contact with HIV doesn't mean you become positive. Back of your hand, you get a drop of blood, it doesn't absorb into you. There needs to be an opening. There needs to be a cut. So if you have good oral health, hygiene,
dental
oral health gene, no cold sores, you didn't just floss your teeth and opened up your gums, you're fine. There's still a risk. I won't say that. There isn't. And also it depends on if you take the fluid into the mouth or not. So you minimize the fluid that goes into your mouth, as well as make sure you have good oral health. And the risk is extremely low.
Trevor Storrs, your face didn't even get red. I want to thank you so much for your specificity.
My pleasure. I'll talk about any of that. I wasn't sure what I could say on the radio.
I understand. You did very well as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future. And by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. If you smoke, odds are you want to quit. If you want to quit, you're probably finding it tough to do. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. The average smoker tries 10 times before they quit for good. You can increase your chances by calling the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. Give it a shot. It's free and it works. Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-7848. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line.
Well, it's Talk of Alaska, and it's your opportunity to have a few words with Trevor Storrs of the Alaska AIDS Assistance Association from wherever you are located in Alaska. You can pat him on the back. You can ask him a question. If you want to be directed to websites and whatnot, he can do that. He's here and ready to talk with you wherever you are in Alaska, whether it's a village or a city. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call of 550-8422. Email is talk@APRN.org. And it could be something not related to you personally. It could be related to someone that you know. That's fine. Trevor, you may not know the answer to this question, but how available is HIV testing in the villages? Is it spotty, or how does it?
It varies from village to village.
I remember the last time we caught up on this, it was not a daily thing. You couldn't necessarily, even if the clinic was open 5 days a week or 7 days a week, you couldn't necessarily always go in there and get it.
Right. Well, a lot of the villages probably do not and still don't have the oral quick test. Mm. It can be expensive. It's hard to get out there in the process. Probably the biggest barrier is you could go and get a test. If you wanted, they would do the blood draw. They could make it happen. And most villages, it's next door, so if it can't get it that day, going the next day. The biggest issue is the village is so small and it's so intimate. Everybody knows everybody. The issue is not about getting the test.
It's my aunt.
It's about my aunt and what am I going to share with her? And she's going to ask me these questions. And does it get out? There's a lot of concerns about confidentiality. Most individuals, if they have a high concern, will leave the village and get their test. And most individuals
go into Fairbanks or Anchorage or Bethel or wherever. Yeah.
Bigger community where they can be more anonymous. And most villages, if you've been out there, and unless you have high risk, you probably don't need the test. And the people that are leaving to get the test are already leaving and are probably engaging things outside of the village, so it works for them. So those folks are getting the test. It's not the expectation that a 60-year-old grandmother gets an HIV test. You know, that's... People push that. If you got high-risk behavior, and what's a high-risk behavior? One, if you do any intravenous drug use, if you have multiple sexual partners, and if you have sex unprotected with multiple partners, it's not a monogamous relationship, and if you are men who have sex with men.
So that kind of leaves Granny out, I think.
Well,
not 100%, though.
Depends on how fun Granny is.
Let's go to Michael, joins the program from Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Michael.
Hi, Trevor. It's Michael from Shanti.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. And yourself?
Good. Shannon and I just wanted to pass on thank you, and we'll also be joining you at the Nickelodeon this evening for your candlelight vigil.
Thank you. And it's actually not at the Nickelodeon. That will be tomorrow night is a movie at the Nickelodeon. But it's at the Baranoff tonight in Juneau at 6:30.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
You bet. And they're doing their candlelight vigil down there, and they'll also do calling of names. So thank you very much for doing that plug. Sometimes I forget Alaska is all the entire state.
You betcha. I hope Fairbanks will chime in here, too. Because I assume they're doing one.
Absolutely. If you go to Interior AIDS website, type it in Google, it will pop up. They'll be on, as well as our information of the different events will also be on our website.
Michael, is there anything you want to add from Juneau?
No, just want to just touch base real quick and just say that.
Okay. Well, appreciate your call. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's go down to Martha, joins the program, is calling from Anchorage. Martha, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, good morning. My ears perked up a bit when I heard about the ostracism that was occurring in rural communities, and I wanted to ask your guest about the nature of that and what might be some of the causes, and I'll listen to the answer off the air.
All right, Martha. Yeah, good. It's she wanted to draw you out on that. I tried to draw you out a little bit on that, as much as you can tell us anyway.
Well, from everybody that I've talked to that have felt it, whether it be in rural or even in the urban setting, it has greatly dealing with fear and the stigma. a lot of people, again, because it's intimate disease, that if you're getting it through sexual contact, that you're either a gay person, and let's say it, they call you a fag, and or if it's a woman, you have to be a slut. You're having multiple partners and you're just screwing around. And or if it's through drugs, intravenous drug users, you're a heroin addict and so forth. So there's this whole image of individuals. And a lot of families don't want that. They don't want to admit that a loved one could be dealing with those social ills as they think they are. And they get ostracized because of it. But the other aspect is the fear that, well, they come over for Thanksgiving and I end up drinking out of their wine glass by accident. Do I get it? We've had people walk in. I've had a guy walk in, and he was absolutely terrified because he found out his buddy was HIV positive, and he shared a beer bottle, and he wanted to be tested instantly. There was huge stigma around that still. So a lot of that fear, and they then have fear, and they will stand behind the issue of, we've got children. What happens if they get it? And or how do we explain this to the children? It's around fear and the stigma. And once people realize that it's not just a gay disease, that it doesn't require you to be a sex worker or a slut, as they put it, and intravenous drug users are not these hardcore drug addicts, we run a syringe exchange, and we give out over 10,000 syringes a month. And the people that walk through our offices are not that stigmatized, stereotypical individual that they show in the movies, the crack addict, heroin addict. These are people walking in suit and tie. You would never guess. They are functional drug users, no different than there's plenty of functional alcoholics. And that's what causes the ostracization.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that. Oddly, in my years when I was working in Wall Street, many of our people in the on the runner end of, you know, that actually ran the stock certificates around were junkies.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, I knew these people for years. They just completely maintaining junkies, put on the tie, go to work every day.
They were
day.
Functional.
Yeah. This is just, right. It's, you're right. The stereotype is really unfortunate
right.
in that. And I obviously in many other things.
And probably the last piece that really plays into things is social image. What is the neighbors going to think? What is grandma and grandpa? I still remember when I came out, I'm a gay male, and I came out to my family and my parents, and they accepted me to an extent and while they were processing, dealing with it. But the first thing they asked me to do was not tell anybody because they were they were concerned how people would react to me, that I would be ostracized. But I think deep down, a part of it was also, how are people going to look at me? Now, that's not an issue now. Far from it, it didn't take long to get rid of that. But a lot of families are, what are the neighbors going to think?
Well, of course.
And that plays into it.
And what is the other branch of the right. family going to think?
Or
and
the
so
church.
Forth.
If yeah. you're quite connected to the church, how's the church? Are we going to be ostracized? Are we going to lose because of your mistake? And that plays into it. So if we get rid of you, then we're still accepted.
Hmm.
And that plays into it, especially if you think of a small community. If you're scared enough just to go in to get an HIV test and then your village finds out you're positive and the family, and it's not as most villages are supportive, but not supportive in this way, that it's not just the individuals who's living with HIV. It could be the whole family that ostracized. And if you're an influential family and you're looked upon and you're up there in the hierarchy, you could lose that hierarchy as well. So there's a lot of fear and also self-preservation that takes into account.
Martha, I hope that went a little bit further in probing this. Probably from this point, we would need to go to someone with more direct acquaintance with particular situations. But we're talking with Trevor Storrs of the Alaska AIDS Assistance Association, and I'm sure you've heard plenty of stories, Trevor.
And Steve, one of the things I'm kind of talking doom and gloom, but I want everybody to know this does not happen in every village. This doesn't happen in every family. It has happened and it shouldn't happen. But I would say more and more with each coming year that we're seeing more and more families accepting in villages, understanding, and we're making some great progress, but it still is out there. And I don't have a percentage for you, but I don't think it is 80% ostracized, 20% accept. If anything, it's probably 60% to 70% accepting. And we're working on that last 30%.
So you feel, you've been doing this for so long now. And it's kind of, you're really just as bouncy as you were the first time I...
Has nothing to do with the coffee in front of me. It's even decaf.
But I mean, I just...
We have made...
I'm in awe.
Yeah. We've made huge progress. And one of the things I think we forget to do as a society is we keep wanting to fight and we want to aim for perfection. And of course we want that. I want HIV to be gone, or if it's here, we all are just... When I say embrace, I mean accepting of it. That day may come, but it's just equally important to celebrate the successes. When AIDS first came out in 81, it was identified as GRID, gay-related immune deficiency syndrome. Huh. Back in 81, I was in junior high. So I came into the epidemic that there was some great fighters out there and making a huge difference. But I was told a story. And Ips was a guy in the hospital, and his buzzer was broken, and the maintenance guy refused to step in and fix it. So the nurse came in, stuck a spoon in the guy's hand, taped it in, and said, if you need me, just bang it against the rail. That was back in probably the late 80s, early 90s. You don't get that. The medical care, people are welcomed. They're accepted and understood, and people take the necessary precautions to protect themselves. But they get treated. People don't get turned away from hospital institution. Now, are there times when doctors don't want to work with that? Absolutely. No matter what, you'll never get away from racism or discrimination. But we have seen it greatly reduced. People get housing. People get the support. Landlords work with us. There was a time when people were getting kicked out of their apartments because they were positive. That doesn't happen as much or to the extent that it did back when. We've made great strides. There's a time we weren't on talk radio talking about it, and I wasn't able to talk about oral sex.
Right.
We've made great strides.
Well, Greg wants to, Greg from Huna wants to follow up on something that you touched on. You were sort of soft peddling it, you know. I was saying, how could things be improved? And it eventually kind of came out, well, we really could do a lot better job of sex education in the schools. And I think Greg wants to follow up on that. Is that right, Greg from Huna?
Yes, that's right. The only ammunition we give our kids nowadays, they see sex pretty much advertised. and then we mention, oh, be celibate. And, that's easier said than done, for one. But what benefits do kids have? You know, they don't know this. What happens to me if I become celibate, see?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the human body? It has tremendous positive ramifications. If you try to do it too much, then it can actually make your brain think more and be more creative. And if you can't channel that, then you can run into some problems. But those problems aren't nearly as much as if you exhaust yourself. But you can talk to any doctor that knows anything about the human body, and the entire human body structure comes down to the health of the cerebral spinal fluid, because that's where every gland of your body gets the elements it needs to maintain its particular glandular function, including the seminal fluid.
Okay, Greg, so basically you're advocating for abstinence, is that right?
Abstinence, because the kids need to know, you know, what happens to them if they become celibate. For one, their bodies become, they have an extreme abundance of energy, mentally and physically. And if you don't believe this, just try it for 2 or 3 months. It'll make a believer of you.
Greg,
I've had this off and on throughout my life.
Right.
And it is just absolutely amazing. Spiritually, your brain will have more energy. It takes in, when you go into meditation, it takes just as much energy for 10 minutes of meditation, of serious meditation, than you will exhaust in running the mile.
Greg, I just love talk radio. Trevor, you want to respond to that a bit?
I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it to a certain extent. What I'm a believer in is information. Not everybody's the same. It has or is working for you and may work for others, but it may not work for everyone. And that's the, one of the greatest things about us as a race, that there's all walks of life and we all have different abilities and needs. And the best way to help somebody, no matter what age, for appropriateness, is give them all the information so they can make an informed decision. We want these kids to be adults. And at 18, they're really thrusted into it. And it's our job to make sure that they learn how to make decisions, not just follow one path. Because not one path always works. And unfortunately, some paths, I'm not talking about doing celibacy is wrong, but some paths could be wrong. That we need to provide people all the information so they can learn how to make informed decisions, so they can also then take accountability for their decisions. And granted, some people will make the wrong decisions even when they're provided all the information. But I know I can go to sleep when I've provided all the information. And on a personal level, I was a 16-year-old boy and those hormones were going. There was no abstinence. That was asking me not to masturbate. That was not going to happen.
I heard it makes you soft in the head.
Well, I'm doing pretty good. It doesn't seem too soft yet.
Yeah,
so holding that back can also be very dangerous. And the drive is very, very forceful and very, very strong. And if you don't address it and empower people with all of it, so if someone really chooses and has that ability to go abstinence and celibate for however long and decide when to come out, that's great. But if they don't decide that, I want to make sure that they have the right information to protect themselves and others.
Greg?
Come in.
Greg, go ahead.
If the reason we have this tremendous sex drive, especially in America, is we consume far, far too much protein and far too much meat proteins, which create tremendous amount of acid toxins, which actually create that drive. So I would say to younger people, try something as an experiment in your life, which will it'll help you deal with a whole lot of frustrations, which you may or may not want to deal with at that point. You may want to concentrate your energies into your schoolwork, but if your physical body is putting you through hell and making you feel things that you don't really want to feel right now, then you can adjust your diet, eat more fish, less abrasive proteins, soy, and that feeling, that sexual feeling, will actually diminish, and you'll be able to control it more.
Greg,
that's what this life is about, is controlling our emotions, controlling our physicalness, and right now the kids don't have the information. The information is there, but it's not being shared with our children.
All right, Greg, thank you very much for your call from Hoona as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender, and by Alaska Communication Systems. ACS offers high-capacity, high-speed bandwidth for business with speeds up to gig E, connecting companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. People are either sighted or blind, right? Wrong. Many eye conditions can lead to low vision. People with low vision have some sight, but even with glasses, they may still have trouble doing things they're used to. A low vision assessment helps people identify special tools and skills to live on their own independently and succeed at work. Learn more at 248-7770 or alaskabvi.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired with support from Lions Clubs.
It's World AIDS Day, and this is Talk of Alaska, and AIDS and HIV is the subject. Statewide, Trevor Storrs of the Alaska AIDS Assistance Association is with us, fascinating bunch of callers, including Whitney from Kenai. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Whitney.
Thank you. Trevor, my concern are the websites where people are soliciting unsafe sex, and to be specific, like Craigslist.
Okay, but you weren't talking about the quadruple A website. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I mean, there's like magazines and stuff too. Sure.
Well, what my specific concern is soliciting sex on the website from strangers, and they're advertising that their partner or spouse is out of town or not home from work yet.
Absolutely.
They want someone to stop by real quick, and they're very specific about what they want to take place, and some of the descriptions are very clear that they're unsafe. And my biggest concern is, how do we educate the people that they are going home to, because a lot of these people don't go to these websites due to the pornography, and you know, most spouses or partners don't feel they need to go there to check to see, you know, if
Whitney, you know, realistically, a lot of this dwells only in the area of the imagination. You know that.
I don't.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. And what we're really talking about is, and a lot of people know the terminology, is on the down low. Individuals that are having sex outside of the relationship. And it has existed long before Craigslist. But I have to admit that the internet has replaced and has made some things potentially easier for that connection. Although, it's pretty amazing, actually, how many ads are up and actually what really happens. There's been studies that there's a lot of talk, not a lot of action. But the question is, how do you protect yourself? Well, one, people can cheat outside of the relationship, whether it be off of Craigslist or not. What it comes down to, for me, is communications. That if an individual feels truly secure and in the environment is not going to ostracize them and accept them, that they both want to be with and have a full-time relationship with this individual, whether it be man or woman, but still want to have that opportunity to play outside, that they are able to talk about that. And then that person needs to let them know, can they or can't they do it? I agree. What that person is doing is incorrect. But one of the things we do is
such a risk.
It is a risk. And what we try to do is we do outreach on the internet and through these sites and try to educate these individuals that if you're going to end up doing this, because I can't fix the social ills and the way society deals with sex and so forth. We try to impact it, but that's going to be a lot longer. But I can address these people right now. And what we do is we teach them about safe sex, try to get them to use the condoms and know their status. And the way we address it is, you know, you want to play on the side and you can't talk to your loved one about it. Try to then ensure that you're not taking anything back home unbeknownst to them to ensure their health and their safety. And when we have those conversations, their behavior does change in the sense of making sure whatever they engage in is safer so they don't take anything back. But it is definitely a risk. And that's why we encourage all couples, whether in a monogamous relationship, is to really analyze the relationship. Are they having the conversations? Are they open? And taking those necessary steps rather than just making assumptions. It's a hard one.
Whitney?
Yes.
Oh, thanks for your call.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. And just a little comfort to think that sometimes people are having more fun fantasizing than actually taking people up on their offers on the internet. I'm comforted somehow. Let's go to Unalakleet. And Joanne, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Trevor Storrs. Joanne.
Yes, I'm using a cell phone, and I'm hoping that I don't get cut off. But I am just wondering, by whose authority is Trevor speaking? I have a feeling he's speaking from a homosexual or gay person's perspective, and I believe that since this is APRN is a public service radio, I think there needs to be more information given by the proper authority and the correct authorities, where people are not advocating condom use, etc.
Oh, okay.
Because I heard that even with condom use, that some sexually transmitted diseases that cause death occur.
I believe that very rarely, Joanne. I believe that's true.
Joanne. There was an epidemic in the past.
I beg your pardon?
When there was an epidemic in the past, people were guarding their villages with ammunition, with guns, so that people wouldn't die from all these different, from this flu that was going on, for example.
Yes. And so, all right, I
can I respond?
Speak up for, yes, absolutely, but let me just defend for public radio. Trevor's gay. He told us he was gay. This doesn't necessarily have to do with gay, however. This is about the HIV virus, which is transmitted in a number of different ways, as he's already explained. He certainly has the authority to be here with us on this program speaking about this.
Right. Good questions. My background is that I've been working in this epidemic on all levels, both directly with individuals who are living with it, doing the prevention work, all the way up to the administration aspects, very intimate with it since the early 90s. So am I the expert of all experts? Absolutely not. But I'm definitely authority. And being here in Alaska for the length that I have been and working with this disease, I'm one of your closest experts here. And one of the things that's really important, yes, I'm gay, but I'm also male. I'm also in my 30s. I'm white. I've worked within the disability community. There's so many walks of me. Gay is only a piece of it. And what I'm bringing to you is all my life experiences and knowledge, not just one avenue. And you're absolutely right. Condoms are made by humans, and they're used by humans. And humans are far from perfect. So do they prevent everything and anything? 100%? Absolutely not. Because humans make mistakes when they use them and or make them. But they greatly, when I say greatly, 10,000 times greatly reduce your risk of contracting HIV or other diseases. Does it protect you 100% from all sexual transmitted diseases? Absolutely not. There's some that just happen through bodily contact, and the condom only covers the penis and what enters. So nothing is foolproof. But again, it's no different. Cars aren't 100% safe, but we do what we can to build them safe, put the airbags, the seatbelts, and so forth. And with time, they have evolved and have been safer. We do the same thing around safe sex.
Well, I'll have to tell you, one thing I learned on Talk of Alaska on World AIDS Day some years ago, and I'm still disappointed about this, is that the sheepskin condoms are not effective.
No. And the reason is because they're made out of animal cells, skins, and they're porous. So it's able to get through. Latex or polyurethane?
It's got to be latex, folks.
Yep. Well, for those who are allergic to latex, there's polyurethane. And polyurethane feels better to some because it actually conducts heat, whereas latex doesn't. And I'm not advocating condoms. What I'm advocating is everybody to look at how they can come in contact with one of four fluids: blood, semen, vaginal fluid, and breast milk. And figure out what you can do to minimize that so you don't contract it.
Trevor Storrs, not only are you fully qualified to be on this program, but you've got a great attitude. I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right.
It's been a lot of fun.
Okay. And yeah, I don't know if I'm going to make the vigil this evening. It just doesn't fit my schedule real
That's
well.
Okay.
But I think this is a great thing, and I do wish I could have been there.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you to Pat Yak and BD Trantina for the phones, Dave Waldron for the controls. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Pin Air with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at pinair.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by AlaskaDispatch.com, reporting from across the state using multimedia and citizen journalism online to tell the story of our state. Find your Alaskan news at AlaskaDispatch.com. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.